Welcome to Healthcare Du Jour, where we dish up and digest the latest in healthcare. For the next 30 minutes, sit back as we bring you insight, commentary, and discussion on trending topics to the table, all expertly served up by our host and his guests. Healthcare Du Jour is brought to you by High-Tech Answers and Healthcare Now Radio, part of the Answers Media Network, and is sponsored by the Law Offices of Myrick O'Connell. Now here is your host, Matt Fisher.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining as we dive into the hottest topics in healthcare. I'm your host, Matt Fisher. On the menu today is Marty Callahan, President of Healthcare Markets at RevSpring. Welcome, Marty.
Glad to be here, Matt.
Well, it's great to have you on the program today. And before we kind of get into the main part of our conversation, I always like to let my guests have an opportunity to provide a little bit more of a background in terms of who they are and what they do. So the floor is yours.
Great. Thank you. So, you know, RevSpring, I'll start there, is an organization that kind of was steeped in healthcare communications, mostly around the print area. And, you know, I joined RevSpring about 7 years ago from, you know, a long stint at TransUnion, and where I got really engaged in data and analytics. And so coming here was really around how do we create more of an engagement strategy with patients and healthcare providers around more information points, data around patients, data about how they should pay their bills, or just data about how they want to be communicated with. And so we set that course. And so my career has been, you know, throughout focused on kind of understanding consumers and patients and interactions with them around you know, how to best attract them, how to best get the best offers to them, how to create a better engagement practice. So that's what we've been trying to do here at RevSpring, and a little bit about me is, you know, that's gives you some insight.
So it's interesting, and maybe to help clarify a little bit, I think you said you were at TransUnion before coming to RevSpring. So is that healthcare focused or more kind of general consumer focused?
That's a good question. I spent about 13 of those years at TransUnion in the financial services and consumer side of the business. So, you know, both in, you know, calling on large banks and credit card companies, really helping them to utilize data to better serve, you know, consumers in that market. And then in the consumer market, I spent a little over a year in developing, you know, consumer-facing products for TransUnion. The next 10, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. Sorry.
The next 10 I spent in healthcare. Yeah, so really kind of identifying some of those same skill sets that financial services, you know, organizations use, marketing companies use to better connect with consumers, to take that to the healthcare side. And, you know, that's one of the themes, I think, and what we talk about at RevSpring is the financial services and marketing parts of the business. If you look at 25 years ago, they started down that path in financial services and credit cards and banking and creating more data analytics around the consumer. And they grew significantly. Healthcare really in the self-pay world, you know, where the patients have balances that continue to balloon, it's really a financial services kind of offering. So we try to bring the best of breed practices that have been available really for 25, 30 years in both marketing and the financial services industry, and introduce them into kind of a new market in healthcare.
So actually that background kind of, I think, is a perfect tee up for kind of the first question, which is, you know, what are some of the similarities and approaches of, in terms of how you want to engage with patients or consumers between, you know, the kind of the financial world and the healthcare world, you know, because, you know, as you were just describing, the fact that you've worked in both worlds seems like the ideal place to be able to have gained insight to see how you can be able to bring ideas from one area or one industry into healthcare.
Yeah, it's a, you know, patients are consumers first and foremost, Matt, and I think the realization of that continued to increase. And we talked about this probably 15 years ago around, you know, when we thought that there would be more choice and more in the consumer market for patients, right? And where they would go to shop, you know, the responsibility from a financial aspect would be higher. And it really didn't start to take off here until probably the last, you know, several years when after ACA, and patient balances began to grow like we thought they would 10 years ago or 15 years ago. And so not only is the responsibility higher, now comes the, kind of the responsibility to not only collect those dollars because they're more important. There's a shift from the responsibility of the payer to the consumer for healthcare financial responsibility. And then beyond that, when consumers then now have a not only a higher responsibility, they start to make different choices, right? If they're going to pay more for a certain service, they might look for better quality service. They might look for, a more cost-effective way to get those services. So financial services was very similar. And when you think about, I'm old enough to remember, 30 years ago, that, to get a credit card took 3 weeks, and it took months to get a mortgage loan. And today those things happen, in a blink of an eye. And the way that those relationships are managed and marketed to consumers, if you think about the marketing side in online relationships, the way that Amazon or Google or others that kind of cater to consumers, that's the same kind of thing that's happening in healthcare. Consumers can make choices, and not only choices, but they can move, and the value of a consumer in the healthcare world is a couple hundred thousand in their lifetime to a provider, and their families, closer to 500,000. So it starts to be, the lines have blurred from financial services to healthcare. So we started to think about, well, why wouldn't we apply those principles that worked in the financial services market? So risk analysis, demographics, preference, how people want to be talked to and how they want to be communicated with, and have a better overall experience for a patient. And so that's where we saw the ties, and data drives a lot of that information, Mike or Matt.
So kind of based on that experience, are you able to provide some examples in terms of what has been able to drive effective engagement?
Sure. Yeah. So I think some of the things that, and these all kind of just standard principles, but a couple of things that I think that are important that drives it. So, standardization and communications, right? If you're a healthcare provider today, if you've got one company who's doing appointment reminders and you've got one kind of messaging going out that way, and you've got somebody else providing data at point of service, and you've got a different kind of message going there, and then after services are provided and the encounter is finished, there's an after post encounter relationship. So that could be a billing statement, it could be a survey, it could be a number of things, it could be post care, right? And adherence, and then but those are all going out from different vendors or different ways, and the consistency of that experience makes a consumer feel uneasy or not know exactly what they might owe or what their next steps are, because there's no centralized way for most hospitals that they manage that. So that's an example of, with a real communication provider that says, hey, let's make a common approach to that consumer. Let's use data to understand who, in my case, who Marty is, what his likes and dislikes are, what the demographics look like in my world, what I'm most likely to respond to, how likely am I to pay? Do I need financial assistance? And then weaving messaging around, Marty in that example, that fits my needs and my own family situation, so that I'm not asked, if I'm unemployed and I don't have the means in which to pay a bill, why are we asking for it, right? So let's understand the situation. Let's understand how we should communicate. But if I'm likely to pay, then there's a whole different track of how we might message Marty. So that's an example, right? If you use data and scoring and predictive modeling to understand who that consumer is, what their needs are, how they want to be communicated with, how they respond, then you can have a kind of a systematic approach to communication across an entire encounter or a lifetime of encounters.
Yeah, and it also feels like, kind of as you're describing that and building these different approaches for the healthcare provider to interact with the patient. It's, you know, is it fair to say that to a large degree, it's almost starting from scratch or really building the infrastructure within the provider and the provider's organization, since, you know, historically you might not necessarily had to worry about the individual patient having so much financial responsibility?
Yeah, and I think there's a couple of ways to go about it. So, you know, from scratch, you know, I think it's hard for providers to build it themselves. They can. It takes effort. It takes data collection. It takes data analysis and analytics. So, you know, kind of the starting point is there's historical data that every hospital has, right? And so it's capturing that data. You know, we believe in data, so we help hospitals do that. You know, we have a, you know, data warehouse, but that, you know, when you think about what a hospital should do in our health system is really identify what data assets they have. And so as you think about the data assets, you most have historical views of patient payments. They've got historical clinical views of where they've come and what they've been seen for. They've got other historical information about their families. There's other data sources out today that are more demographic in nature, so you can understand kind of preferences and really kind of indicators of whether they're a digital user or, you know, more of an online user or a paper user, or just, you know, the things that are likely to influence them. So, you know, the first step is really understanding what data is available in their own systems. I think the second is then data collection and capture around those. And then the third is, you know, creating, you know, kind of coupling into some of those other resources that are out and available in the market today, you know, those demographic indicators. And then the fourth is, you know, having a kind of a data analytics team to understand what those indicators mean. And you start to dig in and understand your patient's behaviors, you understand their preferences, and you understand, you know, what are the likelihoods of different kind of actions and reactions, whether that's a showing up for an appointment, whether that's, you know, adherence to a care, you know, a plan, or whether it's paying a bill. You know, those are the kinds of things that I think are the steps to get into to do that. And then finally, you know, when you put that all together, how do you act upon it? And that's the most important thing is, you know, once you get the data and the analytics around it, how do you make it actionable? So do you have systems in place or partners in place that can carry out the messaging, carry out the payments, carry out the, you know, the post care kind of adherence, follow-ups, all those things then come together. But you have to be able to create actions off of the data and the analytics to be able to drive those kinds of messagings and interactions and engagement strategies.
No, definitely. And it's a very comprehensive amount of information to collect. And for those of you just joining, I'm talking with Marty Callahan from RevSpring, and we're talking about the shifting financial responsibility within healthcare and strategies that organizations can use to help with those efforts. And Marty, a lot of what you're just describing in terms of collecting demographic and treatment history and payment history and, you know, other pieces of information impacting that individual patient, you know, it really seems like that's collecting a lot of information that's being broadly categorized as social determinants of health. And, you know, the piece of focusing on how to help your revenue cycle also kind of seems like it'll feed into, as I said, collecting those SDOH data points, which then is being driven to help provide more comprehensive and holistic care to individuals.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, those are the social determinants, and I think I call them, you know, demographic variables. But they're key in not only the financial aspects, but the whole care spectrum. And so I think those are the, when you think about the data collection and understanding those and how they actually fit to each individual patient or segments of patients, then we start to get a, you know, kind of a, I think a more holistic view of the needs of a patient, how do, you know, providers respond, how does care improve, as well as how does the financial, you know, kind of the financial aspect of their lives improve as well.
So kind of given that interconnectedness, is there sufficient recognition of how those different pieces, you know, as we were just saying, the revenue cycle and the delivery of care are interconnected?
I would say we're at the very beginning stages of, you know, the market understanding that. I think there are some leaders in the space, mostly vendors, but there are a few providers out there that are starting to understand that and trying to get those linkages together. It's interesting to see the kind of the move, and you know, it all started as a financial kind of treatment of a patient, but as we go downstream, or we'll see are more analytic kind of I think not only jobs, but you know, as we think about strategies around this, that's where I think we'll see the market really expand and explode in terms of outcomes and kind of the total holistic care for a patient. And, you know, it's early stage. That's what I would say. You know, we got into the payment side of this is expanding really quickly. So everybody's struggling to just try to get their arms around how do we collect and without thinking about the holistic look of a patient. And so, you know, as we've seen, you know, whether it's financial services or other industries, you know, the myopic view of, oh my gosh, we've got an issue, you know, we've got a collection issue because now 20% of our revenues are now being generated from a patient themselves rather than five. So we got to attack that, and we don't have the tools to do it very well. So we kind of lose the broad view of the market of saying, well, how do we marry that together for a bigger kind of holistic view of the patient? And so I think it's really early stage, and I think we'll see some pioneers bringing that together, whether those are providers themselves, those are, you know, vendors in the space. But I think we've got, you know, probably a, you know, kind of a 3-year, if we're going to look at history, that moves a little faster now, but, you know, probably a 1 to 3 year span where we'll start to see some pretty insignificant leaps in the data side of the business.
No, and I think if you could do it within 1 to 3 years, that, you know, given what you often see in healthcare, which is that it can be very slow moving, yeah, that would be a fairly quick adoption. And, you know, it seems like it's kind of it kind of feed upon itself, because as you're just saying, it's, you know, it's kind of just basic nature to focus on the immediate fire and kind of move from issue to issue with and unintentionally lose the broader picture. But it's, you know, hopefully by putting out some of those fires, it frees you up to then go back to the strategic thinking and be able to see how you can put all the different pieces together and allow a smoother, more efficient operation altogether.
Yeah, and I think, and maybe I overstated, I'm not sure we'll get adoption in 1 to 3. I think we'll have some really significant movement in terms of the ability to understand what some of those linkages are and really create more opportunities. You know, you're right in that healthcare tends to move pretty slowly when it comes to the business side of you know, how they operate, especially clinically, not quite as slow. But so I think we probably have a longer road for adoption, but certainly I think we'll have some more offerings and more real understanding of how these things link together in the next several years.
No, that's very fair. And it's, you know, I agree. It'll be an evolutionary process, but you have to get a solid, you know, each solid foundation in place to keep building upon it. So it's, you know, the sooner we can get this first piece, hopefully that allows quicker acceleration into adoption and then, you know, broader scale use. But I kind of want to pivot back to a point that you made earlier on, you know, that a lot of what's driving the focus is, you know, the increased individual patient financial responsibility. You know, as you said, you know, you can kind of trace it back to the ACA implementation and the rise of, you know, high deductible plans or other types of coverage where a lot more of the upfront cost has been shifted to the patient. And, you know, I don't know how this factors in, but, you know, to what degree are you finding patients fully understanding and appreciating how much they owe up front and how that might be influencing their behaviors?
Yeah, you know, back again, I'll go a little historically, you know, about 8 years ago, the effort started to do more, you know, have more transparency, call it the front, just call it transparency around what a patient might owe for different encounters or different procedures. And, you know, it wasn't widely adopted. I think the business side thought, hey, let's use this as a way to collect. And it's clumsy, right, in many cases, to try to tie those two together, especially at a point of service when somebody's already there. So I think what we're seeing is that more and more adoption of certainly statutory and regulatory requirements for transparency. And so that's driving more of the market today to offer those things, and not necessarily as, hey, let's try to have a, you know, a customer service or registrar person, an employee collect at the point of service. Let's try to educate patients on what those, you know, what they might owe and what their options are earlier. And so that's where we see, you know, kind of movement in the market. And it's more about the engagement strategy. So I think that is taking a, you know, as we continue to hear from our customers and just in the marketplace in general, that continues to drive forward. It's not, you know, not everyone's doing it. The adoption of it isn't quite, you know, kind of crossing the chasm, if you might say, but it is getting closer. And I think we're going to see higher and higher adoption of that, either self-service for patients or certainly pre-service. So there's that more of that engagement, like, you know, process for patients with their providers. And, you know, frankly, that's where they really can start. You think about, again, patient choice is as they start to make choices where to go, that transparency is going to start to make differences if they can know what the costs are compared to, you know, one provider to another, and they can start looking at quality from provider to provider. You know, we'll start getting, you know, kind of patients deciding where they're going to go. And so it's, I don't think it's been widely rolled out across the industry yet. But I think, you know, again, that's one that's probably 8-9 years old in terms of, you know, providing that kind of transparency. I think we're probably at the point where we'll start to see more adoption at the front and taking a different path on how to engage patients with those kinds of that kind of information.
No, you're definitely right that the issues around transparency are kind of forefront at the moment and really need to keep progressing. It's you know, as you said, you're starting to see some regulatory movement and certainly a lot more robust discussion in terms of especially price transparency, you know, because as you're saying, how can you make an informed decision about what you want to do if no side knows the cost until after a service or other procedure has already occurred? And then all of a sudden now you're trying to focus on collecting money where, you know, now that's a little bit of a shock in terms of what's coming around in terms of the responsibility.
Yeah. Yeah. No other industry does it, right? You don't know what you pay till after you're finished. And so, you know, again, there's a lot of data, whether it's contract data between payers and providers, whether it's historical data and claims, that most every provider working with the payer community can really put together a pretty transparent view of what they'll owe and, you know, for any given procedure. So I think this will really be one of those things that'll be a given if, you know, for RCM for the RCM world, but also, you know, you think about back to the marketing aspect and value of a patient and how, you know, how to attract and retain patients. It'll be more important or as important for providers to think about, you know, what this means, not only from a, you know, what you're going to owe, but what you're going to receive and how you receive it and what the care is after that, back to that holistic look, because the value of a patient is so high. And that, I think we're going to find that providers are going to be more competitive. And you see it, you know, I'm from Columbus, Ohio, and I see it today, just from a competition standpoint. So, you know, we have kind of these, you know, the small hospitals popping up in suburban areas where there might have been one larger facility, and now they're going to compete with each other for the same demographic. And, you know, there might be specialties or, you know, or an ER. And you look at that, and I think, well, they're starting to get it. You know, I'm going to compete in this market. I'm going to compete in for consumers. We're going to get closer to the consumer, and we're going to start using more tools to make sure that our patients, you know, our customers. And, you know, I think we're going to see more and more of that in the very short period of time around transparency and around embracing the patient as a consumer.
No, and though you're definitely, again, right that there are a lot of efforts and movement in that direction, because it's, you know, I think you are seeing behaviors change on all sides of the equation. And believe it or not, we're already running up against the end of our time. So I'd like to kind of ask one final question. You know, kind of given all that we've discussed and, you know, recognizing that there are a lot of issues and a lot of development that is occurring at the moment, from your perspective, is there an issue that's being missed or overlooked that should be brought more into the current discussion?
You know, I think from a, when I think about the market and we think about it at RevSpring, I think that, you know, everyone's focusing on kind of the front end, the engagement, you know, moving to the front, getting more engagement with the patient pre-service. And I think what is the next step, and we could say it's missing, but it maybe it's the, you know, it's the follow-up. Right? How is the engagement continuing post-care? And so whether that's adherence, whether that's follow-up, whether that's satisfaction, I think that's, you know, kind of where, you know, because everybody's chasing the dollars and, you know, that part of it, I think is, has lacked focus and consistency from a provider standpoint. So I think that's the kind of the missing piece as people run to the front, you know, how do we make sure that the fulfillment of service and the post-care measurements and the quality outcomes are really being, you know, measured, monitored, communicated? And I think that's probably the next stage as I look at it. And, you know, when you think of, you know, reimbursement models, that's kind of where we're heading to.
Yeah, no, that'll definitely be interesting to track and to keep an eye on. But believe it or not, as I'd indicate, we are already out of time. I want to thank my guest, Marty Callahan, for a great conversation today.
Thanks so much for having me.
And thank you to everyone listening. Keep the dialogue going and connect with me at hashtag HCDEJURE. I'm Matt Fisher. Until next time.